Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and this hour we're looking back at some of the standout books of 2020. Up now, an interview about a heralded nonfiction book about mental illness, Hidden Valley Road, Inside the Mind of an American Family. The Washington Post, NPR, and Slate all listed as one of the year's best books, and it also made it onto President Barack Obama's reading list. The American family at the center of the book is the Galvins, 12 children, 10 sons, and 2 daughters, all born between 1945 and 1965. 6 of the children were diagnosed with schizophrenia. Over the last century, the family has been the focus of attention from members of the psychiatric community, and their genetic material has been analyzed by researchers at various institutes and pharmaceutical companies. Of course, the issue of nature versus nurture was part of the conversation. Hidden Valley Road details the lives of the Galvin children and their parents based on interviews with members of the family. We learn about how the disease shaped the lives of the boys who developed it, as well as the siblings who never did. Within their stories, author Robert Kolker also weaves the history of our often flawed, continuously changing, and still incomplete understanding of schizophrenia and mental illness, of which the Galvins form a cornerstone. Ranking it among the 10 best books of 2020, the New York Times describes it as, quote, a feat of narrative journalism, but also a study in empathy. When author Robert Kolker joined me in April, I asked him about meeting the family for the first time.
I really was on the phone with the 2 sisters in the family. There were 12 children in the family, and the 2 youngest were the only girls. Those sisters were in their 50s when I first talked to them 4 years ago. And for decades, Margaret had been thinking about a way to make a book out of her family story, and her sister Lindsay and she had been in on those conversations together. They finally decided they wanted to talk to an impartial journalist, someone who could really get everyone's point of view in there and tell the medical story as well, and really follow the story wherever it led me. When I first talked to them, I couldn't believe it. But first, I had 2 big questions. The first was, how could all this happen to just one family? And that's not just schizophrenia, but any number of other horrible tragedies. And then the second question I had was, how could they still be a family after all of this? Why wouldn't these 2 sisters just leave town and never come back? And those were the 2 real mysteries I investigated when reporting out the book.
How did they describe their family to you?
Well, you know, there was a disconnect because they were so excited about telling their story, but the things they were saying were so tragic. There were 6 brothers of the 12 children who were acutely mentally ill, all of whom had schizophrenia as a diagnosis at one time or another. There was a murder-suicide involving one of the brothers. There was sexual abuse involving another one of the brothers. And there was possible abuse by other people in the family, you know, perpetrated on some of the sons as well. It was stunning to me that all this could happen. The father in the family also had a debilitating stroke. One of the sisters was plucked out of the house at a young age to go live with a, you know, wealthy benefactor, and her life was turned upside down. It seemed like several different books all wrapped up in one.
Were the women matter of fact about it? Or did they understand that it was extraordinary?
Oh, they knew it was extraordinary. And in fact, like when they learned that Oprah Winfrey had picked the book for Oprah's book club, they were thrilled. But one of the sisters said to me that when they would watch Oprah's show years ago, they would turn to one another and say, whoever she's talking to on the show that day seemed kind of ordinary compared to their family. So it seemed kind of right to her that it would happen that way. But on the phone, they were they wanted to drive home a feeling of hope, not just because they had made it this far and were leading good, functional, happy lives in spite of everything, but also because there was some scientific progress that had happened because of their family. Their family has been studied since the 1980s, and 2 different research teams have come up with some conclusions and some findings that might help us understand schizophrenia better and might even start a path toward treatment.
My guest is Robert Kolker. The name of his new book is Hidden Valley Road, Inside the Mind of an American Family. So these two, the two siblings, the two girl siblings in this family, are interested in having their story told. How was it approaching the rest of the family?
Well, really, I've been a reporter in New York City, a magazine journalist for 20 years, and so one of my first reactions when listening to the sisters was that because of medical privacy laws and because of how sensitive so much of the information was about this family, it would be quite likely that there'd be at least one person in the family who would not want any of this to be public and would probably try to assert themselves. And so I was pretty skeptical, but I was also open-minded and I decided to take it slow. And so I got on the phone once a week with various members of the Galvin family, starting with the matriarch, Mimi, who was still alive but in her early 90s, and also talked to some medical researchers who had crossed paths with the family. And I was really very open-ended in my conversations, simply saying, your sisters are interested in this, what do you think? And lo and behold, a few months later, at the end of all these calls, everybody was on board, and so I was suddenly very encouraged and very excited to be able to tell a story of mental illness from every family member's point of view.
In a Medium post online, you described the interview with Mimi Galvin, the matriarch, as the most stirring of all. What was so impactful about that interview, and what reflections did she have?
This woman had endured such unbelievable tragedy, and she, like anyone else in her situation, lacked the tools to cope with the situation when it was happening. There was so much stigma and so much shame wrapped around mental illness that she felt she couldn't talk to anyone. The medical community was still blaming mothers and fathers for mental illness, and so she couldn't even go there. She spent many years just trying to cover it all up, and so to have someone impartial, someone who was going to write a book, visiting with her was wonderful for her. She was very, very happy to talk. But also, she was very proud and not really interested necessarily in talking about unpleasant things. And so with her daughter's help, I was able to get her to talk about that shame and that emotion. And that was really stunning to witness.
It's important to note that schizophrenia doesn't look the same for everyone. And in this family, the case as well, some heard voices. One son moved all the furniture out of the house one day. Would you mind explaining a little bit how the brother's symptoms manifested differently and around what ages?
This really was one of the big jobs of the book, was to not just say, well, then one son went crazy and another one went crazy. I wanted to make sure that these people were people in the book, mm-hmm. every bit as much as the Wells siblings were. And so I tried to give detailed portraits of each of them. They followed the pattern, by and large, of schizophrenia, which is that the onset of illness is in late adolescence, so your early 20s. There's one exception, Peter, who had his psychotic break at the age of 14, then Matthew at 18, and then the others all around 20, 21, 22. But, there is one who considered himself to be descended from an octopus and was obsessed with religious subjects, and another who believed that a Chinese emperor was talking to him from the sky, and another who was convinced that he ran all the traffic lights in town and that he was Paul McCartney. And, then there was the murder-suicide, which I mentioned before, just a tragic event with a very charismatic young man, Brian Galvin, who one day killed his girlfriend and then himself. Mm-hmm. And Peter was a natural performer who just loved playing music wherever he went, and he still is now, even after years and years of medication, he still has that musical ability. It's been really something getting to know these guys. The surviving three, Matthew, Donald, and Peter, are really quite charming and really interesting people still.
For the siblings who didn't develop schizophrenic symptoms, what was life like for them?
Well, it took a little while, but what I finally realized is the thing they all had in common is that they spend every day of their lives, and perhaps even now are still spending every day of their lives, wondering if this was going to happen to them too. Mm-hmm. I mean, how could it not be that way when one by one so many of their brothers were falling ill? And so that fear really dominated their lives and was really the thing that they shared. That said, they all had very different responses. One brother tried to leave town as soon as he could and would come back only occasionally, and while very supportive and very positive in general, just wasn't really involved. Another one became convinced that it was bad parenting that led to the illness. He really believed that a suppressive environment made things worse than they already were. And another, became very invested in becoming a success in business and was very worried about the stigma hurting his career. And another, Mark Galvin, the siblings he was closest to, all three of them became ill, and so it was really like losing his entire family, because in a large family like this, there's little family units within the unit, the larger mm-hmm. unit, and he really was very despondent for a very long time, as if those three brothers had sort of fallen off the face of the earth, and that was really quite tragic for him, but he has stabilized now and is, married with a family.
My guest is Robert Kolker. The name of his book is Hidden Valley Road, Inside the Mind of an American Family. So between each chapter about the family, you include a historical perspective on schizophrenia and how it's acknowledged and defined over time. When did schizophrenia begin to be recognized as mental illness?
It really happened at around the turn of the 20th century. There were always glimmers that it was something that might run in families. All you had to do was look at some of the royal families of Europe to see that madness sort of ran in the family. But nobody really talked about it as a physical or psychiatric illness until psychiatry was, took the place of discussions about being possessed by evil spirits and whatnot. And so you had two camps in the beginning. You had the folks who named schizophrenia and as an illness, who really believed it had some physical properties. And then you had people like Sigmund Freud, who really believed that mainly it was something, it was nurture, not nature. It was some childhood trauma or some way that you were raised that caused the illness. And those two camps really never stopped debating for decades. And in through the time of the Galvins, that argument was still going on. And it's modulated a little bit now, because now we look at genetics and we see that it's not the complete picture either, that some genes are expressed by the environment. And so we're back to nature and nurture all over again.
What did the Galvin family offer to researchers that they really hadn't had access to before?
The researchers who studied the Galvin family were convinced that the Galvins and other families with lots of schizophrenia in them were like terrific petri dishes, perfect sample sets where everybody shares the same genetic material, and so perhaps each of them has some sort of mutation or irregularity in their genes that they all share, or that only the sick ones share, something that could point to schizophrenia in the genes. And so they really believed they could find that. Unfortunately, they were starting work in the 1980s, in the early 80s, where the technology hadn't really caught up to genetic research, and so they didn't have popular support from the leaders in the psychiatric community, who thought that schizophrenia was just way too complex to study this way. But they had faith, and they collected data on the Galvins and others for years and years and years, and finally that data has proven to be useful. It's quite an amazing story, and toward the end of Hidden Valley Road, I'd point out two different really, really interesting findings that might point the way to something amazing in the future.
Will you share them?
Oh, yes. There is a team led by Robert Friedman at the University of Colorado who has identified a genetic area, a gene called CHRNA7, which is a so-called nicotinic receptor, and it's involved in brain function. It's a sort of a master communicator gene. And it's called a nicotinic receptor for a reason. It is activated by nicotine, and there's a stereotype out there that people with schizophrenia often feel better if they chain smoke, and that could be because the nicotine is helping them focus and helping them get some control over their delusions or their hallucinations. And so Robert Friedman's innovation was, and the Galvin families have this issue, by the way, and Robert Friedman's innovation was to find a way to strengthen that CHRNA7 gene in utero. So not to give unborn babies cigarettes, but to give them a nutritional supplement called choline, which can strengthen that part of the brain and perhaps make people who otherwise were vulnerable to mental illness become more resilient. And we'll know in several years, studying the babies who've been given a lot of choline in utero, how they're faring. But it looks very positive so far. That one's an amazing one. And then secondly, there's Lynn DeLisi, a brilliant psychiatrist and geneticist who's right now in the Northeast in Boston, And she, with the help of Amgen, finally sequenced the genome of the Galvins and found another irregularity on the SHANK2 gene, which is another communication gene neuron. And it also points the way, possibly, not just to that particular genetic issue, but to what it does in the brain, which is it's another communication cell, and it's another place where perhaps other people with schizophrenia have that issue.
That was my conversation with Robert Kolker, author of Hidden Valley Road, Inside the Mind of an American Family.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.